Welcome to Alternative Literature, 9 o'clock on Wednesday. Tonight's a very special evening. We're here with Dave G, who's come to be a bit of a guinea pig, and we're going to ask him some prepared questions. It's going to be a gentle stroll through Dave's life and recovery with the aim to hopefully draw out some things that I know I need to hear. And I'm really thrilled that you're here. Dave, how are you doing?
Well, doing pretty decent enough. Thanks. Cheers.
Okay, I'm going to go straight into the first question, Dave. Thank you for joining us, first of all. And can you introduce yourself and share a little bit about the journey that brought you to Tusnua?
A little bit about myself. I'm still in my 50s. I'm from Scotland. It's maybe quite obvious to anyone. So I'll get out of the, I'll get that out of the way, and then not so obvious. Well, yeah, I've been abstinent from alcohol and drugs for over 31 years, but I never really pushed that too much, to be honest, because I'm just a human being who's just trying to do his best in life and deal with anything that's presented to him, really. Other than that, I've got two other biological brothers, and I could elaborate a lot more about that there, but a little bit about myself. Yeah, I've done things in my life without alcohol and drugs that I would never ever have done if I continued doing what I'm doing. That's really what I could sum things up there. What about you, Jude?
So what I was really thinking of is that it's always interesting to me how somebody who started off in perhaps one community, which I think, to the best of my knowledge, is one kind of fellowship, ends up in Tusnua. And I just wondered what made you start there, and what kind of drove you to seek out something perhaps slightly different, and how was that part of your journey? How did you end up in Tusnua?
That's a good question that I'm happy to talk about. Like a lot of people who've stopped drinking alcohol, but I can only talk about me. I needed help, and I wanted help so much because I'd unaddressed mental health issues, and I got to the point where I really was desperate. Real deep real deep depression. And really acute anxiety, and so I attended my first AA meeting. It was in Tenerife in 1994, and that's where I had my first meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I've continued coming to various types of formats of meetings, since then. And I got to the point where it was. Well, actually, my awareness about a different type of information that might help me in my life came via a great resource now that I still talk about today. It's called a platform called AA Agnostica, and I'll credit the guy Roger Cavett. He began that, and it planted seeds in me, and it tapped into something in me that I wanted. For me, being sober, it takes courage actually to not conform and comply, but do the things that I always wanted to, and that was really literally to free myself, actually to try at least try and be the real Dave, rather than the one that conforms and complies and plays it safe. So that information there was helpful for me because it allowed me to realize I don't have to say the same Kool-Aid language, you could say. That's been quite binary, but that same language, I could say really what I wanted, and that was allowing me to do that via that kind of permission, reading that stuff there from Roger, and then I began amassing a library of secular books that I've still got. I've not read them all. Some books I get, and some I read, and some others I don't. Not that I don't want to, but when you get a book and you maybe read about 10 pages and you put it down, but I've got quite a good library. And then I think it was about 4 years ago, I was going online with COVID, and then somewhere, I can't remember where, I found secular, and then I found Tusnua. So it was via secular groups, and then I found Tusnua. And then Tusnua, for me, I love the idea of being a free thinker. I absolutely love it. It's like a badge that I unconsciously wear with kind of great pride, because it's like I'm saying, yeah, I'm giving myself permission to be open to change. I'm giving myself permission to allow myself, my brain and my soul, to take on new ideas. You know, I'd rather have been rigid and orthodox, and yeah. So that's possibly answered that question, dude. Yeah,
No,
that's got there.
that was absolutely amazing, and thank you for giving me a reminder of Roger, the debt of gratitude that I owe him for starting up that site and collecting all that information that's there in the public domain, and leading me to very much behind you in the quest to find people who were not drinking or using, and had found a way to live, but who, like me, couldn't entertain any idea of supernatural thinking or anything to do with God. And that was what I needed to find. I still need it. That hasn't changed. And thank you. I really share that similarity with you. Now, the next question, Dave, and thanks for being such a good sport. I really do appreciate it. So looking back at them, you did mention there that you've been around quite some time from that first meeting in Tenerife. So looking back at that man, that younger man who first came to into recovery, what do you remember about him?
Oh, before I came into recovery, or whatever people want to talk, the life of sobriety or whatever language, stopping, you know, drinking alcohol. Before that, I know clearly what I was. I was a guy who was really unaddressed, just unaddressed mental health issues, and then as a result, I had just continual anxiety and you know, continual fears that were going through my mind that were never expressed. There was always a feeling of on the outside looking in, you know, outside looking in, and I there was a, there was like a just a constant on the rabbit, you know, the rabbit wheel, you know, going round and round and never ever seeming to get off. And there was a I wouldn't say a victim mentality within me, but it was like, why is nobody ever able to hear me? Why does nobody want to hear what I've got to say? But the reality was, I had an unaddressed codependency, acute codependency, where I was really, really acutely afraid of being rejected. I was acutely afraid of being abandoned. Yeah, no, I really did feel abandoned. I'm saying being abandoned. I felt abandoned anyway. You know, the relationship that I had with my family was quite wrought. My two brothers, they've went through their life pretty much unscathed, it seems. But myself, my disposition, my personality, it led me to feeling I wanted more from outside. And I really didn't feel that. You know, we talk regularly about this on the meeting that I have, you know, on a Wednesday. That feeling of just not being enough, just not being enough, you know. And there was always a feeling like, you know, what can I do to feel to fill that real unease? So for me, the solution really was to get drunk, you know, and then take away that there. And it's crazy, this. I had this idea that what if I get really, really, really drunk? I might wake up tomorrow and everything will be gone and everything will be fine. And it was actually, you know, I was trying to escape myself, but Dave always ended up, you know, waking up with the same stuff, but actually, probably worse, you know. And it had to get to the point where, you know, I had to, you know, stop drinking, you know, as I say, and that was 1990, 1994. Yeah.
Brilliant. You ready for the next one?
Yeah, crack on, yeah.
Thank you for setting the scene for us. I want to just drift now forward a little bit in time to where you started coming to the Fellowship of AA. And I'm trying to unpick some of these old memories. It might not come to you, but I was kind of fascinated to find out. What do you remember about your first turning point? Or an early turning point when you could sense something was changing about you. It might have been subtle, it might have been quite dramatic. Can you remember back to when you stopped feeling so uncomfortable and started to feel something has happened here?
For me, it's hard to put into words because I've never been asked that before. But I probably thought it maybe unconsciously. But to be put in a real direct question like that, there, I was so afraid of, like I say, so afraid of opening up, particularly in a group of people, because I was always, I always placed importance on what others thought about me, and I wanted. And there is a power, I believe, in speaking up in groups. I really see that. There's a different dynamic in every interaction. There's a dynamic that I have within myself, what I tell myself. If I tell myself crap, I'm going to feel crap. But I believe the power and dynamic of sharing in a group, it was, and for me, it really went against everything that I had conditioned myself to do before. I had conditioned myself to keep everything inside, and as a result, well, I don't know anyone else, but I know that the simplicity of that there is depression. You're not expressing yourself. So as a result, being asked in an AA meeting, do you want to share, Dave? It was like literally pulling teeth. It really was. However, I just knew if I start to speak and open up, it's going to help me. It's going to help me, because I can only speak for myself. But see that place where you are when you're keeping everything inside and you're walking about, it really is a lonely, lonely place. Because you know yourself, you've got a physical body, you're connected to the ground. But if you feel that, potentially no one wants to hear me, nobody sees me, but I'm not able, but really I'm not connecting with my voice and my spirit. And I'm happy with that word there, I totally am. Like, I believe everybody's got a unique character that is them. And I think it takes courage to speak that character, that spirit, as well. So for me, try to get your question answered there, Jude.
No,
It's probably,
that's marvellous. It's everything I wanted to hear.
I'll just finish it. I think it's just to say is I think it was to I got that feeling that I was starting to get something out when I was speaking in an AA meeting, simply, and helping myself.
No, I completely relate to that. There is something quite new that I hadn't experienced before, and it's about that. And I think having a kind of courage that I hadn't had before, and I really do identify so much with that. And now you speak in front of people all the time. It doesn't faze you in the slightest. So something's changed. Many things have changed, but that's just one of them. So moving on to something maybe slightly lighter. So tell me about some of the things you've done in sobriety that the drinking version of you could never have imagined possible.
Oh, yeah, I was speaking about that with somebody earlier on. It's oh, well, right, okay. Right, so when I first stopped drinking, I knew myself, I'm on my chance here, and I think in life anywhere, you've got to decide which direction am I going to go here, which is helpful. I might not see where I'm going. It might be like, I've got to trust the process here, but I just knew not drinking is going to be helpful to me. And I realized that I'd done a bit of damage to myself brain-wise. I thought, like, but okay, let's mitigate this and let's go forward. So I went to the college, the local college, which is just a stone's throw from me here just now, albeit a big throw of a stone. And I managed to get a degree, sorry, a qualification in social science, and then I got a diploma in social science. And that gave me the satisfaction to know that, yeah, I could achieve something. I achieved nothing really, when I was drinking and drugging, to say the least. So I got that, and then some friends would say, well, they said to me, "Well, Dave, why don't you go to university?" And for me, that was such an alien concept, to say the least. But yeah, I went to university and I got a degree in psychology. And I've got to put the caveat, if that's the right word, I would never ever have got that if it wasn't for me deciding to reach out and get support and help. And it's a bit like anything in life. If I want to get somewhere, it'd be foolish to not access all the support and resources that are on offer. So I did. So got that there, and then 3 years later, I got another degree. One of the things that I don't talk much about as well is driving. I never ever thought I'd be able to drive. I thought my brain was mashed, and I was like, I would look at people in cars and thinking, look at them. But eventually managed to drive. I had about 50 lessons, and I passed after my fifth attempt and fourth in the theory. But the principle about behind that is, as one of my heroes, Robert the Bruce, would say, if you don't try first, try again, or something like that. What else? So I could honestly, I've jumped out of planes, Jude. I've skydived. What else? I've swum. Events. I started swimming out in the outdoors. Outdoor swimming. Never thought I'd do that. I did that just before COVID, and I've done some events. I've done a Spartan event. I've done a couple of triathlons. I joined Toastmasters as well about 12 years ago, and that's something that I never ever times a thousand ever thought I would be doing. And for me, the principle behind that is trust in the process. If I think I can do something, I tell myself now, you might not see the total outcome straight away, but just take a little step towards it. So my time in Toastmasters has been really fruitful for me. I've entered humorous speech contests. I've been in contests, different types of. I've managed to do a podcast, which I've got a podcast just now, and I've got a blog, and that's only direct results of being connected to Toastmasters and public speaking. And yeah, and like you said, in comparison to where I was before, it's a change, and I'm sure everyone likes change, or wants change. Wants change. So, I've done little courses as well, over the years, drawing, acting. I went along to an improv thing. And dancing. I've been dancing 20 years, an Argentine tango for 13 years, I think. That's been just great. That's just great. Dancing tango. And it's opened up so many doors. And for me, it's just about connection and putting myself out there. What else? Because other things that's come to mind.
You've done really well. You've done really well.
Carry on, there'll be other things that will come to mind, but yeah, go
If
ahead.
you think of more, just chip in. I want to get into something that might be difficult. I think you'll handle it with panache, but if you don't want to go there, we absolutely won't. So, look, when I first saw you, my first impressions were excellent. But I cannot deny you are a what I perceived as a strong, burly, tough Scottish man, right? Of the ilk where, our generation and our parents' generation, men were expected to behave in certain ways. Masculinity was performed in certain ways in sort of the environments that we might have come from. And I just wanted to explore a little bit about, the sorts of things you might have learned as a child and how to grow up and be a man and to navigate the world. And how that might not have served you in recovery. Because also, as much as I've known you to be a really strong man, I've also known you to be able to speak with even more strength and say things like, I felt fear today, or sometimes I can feel vulnerable, which for me are signs of true strength. And I just wanted to know, how's your childhood and your drinking influence where you've ended up today in terms of learning to be you as a man coming from a background where masculinity was a quite a different thing to how we might be or we might perceive it down the road now we're sober.
Yeah, it's a good question, because my idea of masculinity today, I wouldn't even thought about that in my formative years. But underlying it all, there was a young boy who wanted to, I suppose, presented himself to the opposite sex, woman, in a more confident manner. And I didn't. What Dave did was. I thought that I hoped, it was more a hope that by being nice, and I cringe at that word as well today, being nice, you know, that'll be make me favorable to women. Now, I'm not, my goal in life isn't to connect with the opposite sex, but it really made me feel truly inadequate when I wasn't able to, because I cultivated this idea, if I'm nice, two women, and behind that nice was just an absolute fear of putting myself forward. That's all it was, you know. And I recommend anyone who's interested in this, there's a classic book called No More Mr. Nice Guy, and that was such a groundbreaking book for me. So for myself, yeah, I got involved in football violence, and I don't say that, I just say it because it was a fact of my life. That's all. And what I did was I portrayed the tough guy. All I was doing, simply all I was doing objectively now I can see was, like you said, you're preventing myself showing my vulnerability. And all I was doing was getting used to adrenaline, cortisol, all that chemicals within myself that really weren't particularly helpful. Adrenaline, cortisol, fear-based stuff. And that became the norm, you know. And then I don't know. Then did how did things change? They didn't change overnight, to say the least. To say the least, you know. When I stopped drinking, I was still acutely shy. You know, 27, still acutely shy, still difficult to open up. But my my change, I think, has came about knowing that it is okay, as you said, it is okay to be calm. It is okay to be calm, and it is okay to speak your truth, Dave, even though it's really uncomfortable, even though it's really goes against what you want to do. But that's not easy to do. That takes courage. And I still don't find that easy. I don't find it easy to set boundaries, but I know that's the right thing to do. And there's lots of paradoxes, I believe, in life. Never mind recovery, but in life. And one of the paradoxes I truly believe is, when you're truly truthful, particularly it could be to, like we're talking about masculinity, to a significant other, that's probably and possibly attractive in itself. You know, but that goes against anything that I think, well, what Dave wants to do, but deep down he knows it's the right thing to do, to set a boundary, to say, this is what I want, or I don't like this. You know, I could go on more about that, June, because I'm really quite interested in all that, you know, today.
We might do another session because it's a big topic that I'm interested in, especially how you've navigated it and the learning and the bravery. I've got another couple of questions before we wrap up. The next one is it links very much into that. It's just because I've seen, I've heard your story. It's visible in the way you operate and you move around the world. So you've got a blank canvas in front of you now that you're sober. You've done an inordinate amount of growing that we cannot just distill into this 20-minute conversation. But with this blank canvas in front of you right now, I know that you will be exploring some of your intellectual and work aspirations. What's next for Dave?
What's next for me? Well, I didn't make it any secret. You know, I put it public on Facebook, and that was, to be honest, that was quite a brave thing for me to do, because you know, when you do these things, there's always that imposter syndrome slightly kicks in. But anyway, for years I've thought about becoming a coach, and it's simply because I would recommend this to anyone, absolutely anyone, to nurture your inner coach. And it's simply because I believe, this is what I believe, and you talked about this earlier on. I see the not believing in God. This is just me. Every morning I pray, and every night I pray. But it's not because I believe in a deity or anything. It's just I'm trying to get connected to something that's within me, you know. But the coaching thing, over the years, I think I've developed lots of strategies, and it would be foolish for anyone, I think, in recovery or sobriety not to do that. You know, it's like you're installing kind of new software. There's two ways to look at the word program, I think. It's a structured set of activities. I like that idea in your life, to do something different. Or programming, which is a little bit more clinical, but you're putting in a different way of thinking. So I've done that, and put that up on Facebook. Got lots of favorable responses, which I expected anyway. But it's I felt good after doing it because it was like a statement of this is what I'm doing now, and I'm proud of myself for putting myself forward for that, and I actually was, because when I think about it, God, I would never ever have thought about that 5 years ago, 10 years. I thought about it, but to actually do it's different. Thinking about something is different than doing it. Doing it is different than thinking about something. I know this, and I think everything's about being really radically honest with ourselves. It's all well, very well talking about something, but actually making it happen is different. So yeah, the coaching things you do. Yeah, I'm in a job that great job. It's got lots of benefits working outside in nature, but this is just a journey that I'm willing to kind of explore.
Wonderful, and I'm really proud of you, and I'm really glad that you are starting to explore it and taking action to bring about that dream. And also, thank you for being what I consider as brave to mention praying in a secular space. I, for a long time, avoided praying. I tried to work on an 11-step program, and I didn't ask for things to be removed from me, right? Even though I don't believe in any God, that's absurd. And yes, I in the morning have to direct my thinking externally. The believers would call it praying. At night time, I have to do my step 11 stuff. Believers would call it praying. I call it directing my thinking externally. And it's forging these cognitive frameworks that help me to stay considered.
Yeah, it's more like talking to my inner self, I think, like really, but
Exactly. So
just a
I'm
communication.
not an absolute lunatic. And I'd rather compromise some of the semantics to have a peaceful life where I'm healthy and whole and useful than, I worried about terminology for a long time, and it didn't help me at all. It really didn't help me. So thank you for talking about that. It's a weird one, isn't it? But that's just how I've ended up here and how I ended up in AA and with that program. So yeah, cheers for that. Last question, Dave, you'll be glad to know. You have when you look at the life that you've built, and I'm talking like what your childhood, all the things that you've mentioned tonight, all the things that you might not have mentioned. So you've had trials and tribulations, the good and the bad, and then you've had this long stretch of sobriety, and lots of great things have happened to you, as well as some challenging things. When you look back, and this answer is going to change if I asked you tomorrow or if I asked you in a week's time, but just for this right moment, right now, what springs to mind of the thing that you are most grateful for?
I'm just saying this. Maybe it's a sensitive part of me, but I'm really grateful for the relationship that I developed with my mum. At the end of years, that I would never ever have been able to do if I was drinking. I get quite a little bit emotional when I talk about that. My pal Jedson here, and he was a really great support. So I think, and I would never have got through all that stuff. And I've got to say, to anyone today, get a support network around you, and allow them to help you, and but the relationship, probably looking back, is the oh sorry the thing that I remember I'm grateful for is the ability to be truly there as a son, for my mum. That's yeah. That would sum it up. And just knowing that I suited up, showed up every step of the way for her. And also as well, I actually the good thing as well that I'm grateful for, I was able to share the whole process with my friends, whether it be online and offline as well, about that there. What was that period? Yeah.
That's lovely, Dave. Thank you so much. And that concludes our stroll through your life. I'm going to end the recording now. Thank you, Dave.